Now, if that is the case, if we're growing in such ways, we're then going to increase the equity can also be from this. So, with that, I would like to call upon Dr. Patrick McCo from the department and his team to come and give us a broad overview of the current situation.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Members of the Portfolio Committee on Environment and Tourism, good morning. I'm here this morning with my colleague, Ms. Cindy Swann, who is the head of the broad-based economic empowerment tourism chapter council secretariat. The minutes are from the chapter council in October 2005, and the secretariat presently sits in the department. The intention that later in the course of the year they would move and be located close to South African tourism, more to have operational independence, because this chapter council is supposed to oversee the work of the all roles there are in tourism, but also certainly the government and the department. The chapter will be making a presentation, we made it available last week. And we will cover a number of issues. We'll provide a background to why the need for transformation in this industry is context. The strategic approach of the council, outcomes of the study that we undertook last year, which was finalized early this year, and which was also presented to a consultative workshop on transformation on the 17th of April in Johannesburg, will give you the number of challenges and recommended action. The background to broad-based black economic empowerment comes from the history of this country and the fact that the majority of the citizens of this country until 1994 were not included in the political and economic direction of this country. And since 1994, there have been various attempts at transformation. The Constitution is very clear on redress. And the Act which came into being in 2003 was after commissions that said, and the fact that it was noted that transformation was taking place, but not in a coordinated or integrated fashion. And this is where the Act then came in through BCI. And most of the work that we are doing in this area is contextualized under what the Act sets up. We also speak to the Code of Good Practice that were gazetted in February this year, which guides some of the work that we need to do. We speak about the tourism, charter and scorecard, as well as the charter council. So we take note of the issues that you have raised and the reason why this public hearing has been called with regards to tourism and sectors. We are just today ending in Durban, and we're talking about tourism having surpassed goals, and indeed the point is made about the fact that transformation in this sector, like many other sectors in the economy, needs to be quickened and deepened. We also note that government has made tourism a priority area and it's accelerated a shared growth initiative going forward. And so, indeed, the world's eyes are on us with regards to how this particular sector will meet the goals of reducing poverty, reducing unemployment, but also ensuring that we spread the wealth across for the benefit of all South Africans. Chapter, I think we've already spoken about the fact that in 2004, the minister appointed a steering committee, developed a charter and scorecard, finished its work in December 2004. The charter was gazetted in March, early 2005, as public comments were called for. Until March 2005, in April, Cabinet dealt with this matter. A charter was then finalized. The minister announced that in Durban 2005, and in July 2006, in 2005, the industry and the minister signed the charter, respecting the contents of the charter. Incorporated in the charter is the generic scorecard, or the scorecard which forms what we intend to do in tourism, And as you know, the charter has seven elements, looking at ownership, strategic management, employment equity, skills development, enterprise development, procurement, and corporate social responsibility. Our chairperson has spoken about the charter currently developed by Mr. Sami Sokutu, an executive director at the African Bank, and there's a number of role players on the Charter Council and the Integrity Commission. It's a Charter Council which has both government as well as provincial and national levels, as well as people in the tourism industry that Mr. Sokutu shared with the bank. But basically the banks are having increasing interest in tourism because of having to finance enterprise. Chapter on this slide, we indicate growth in tourism arrivals into South Africa, starting from 1994, just after the change which occurred in this country. And this, we see growth driven by the democracy dividend, but also the tourism offering that South Africa has. And we, through South African tourism, market the country as a cultural destination. We also market our splendid wildlife, our stunning natural beauty, tendency, as well as shopping experiences. The minister announced arrival figures for 2006, and we've had a growth from 2005 to 7.3 million, just under 8.4 million in 2006. Safe to say, well, growth in tourism was around 4% globally, and our growth was around 4%. Gentlemen, on this slide, we indicate where transformation sits based on studies that we have undertaken. And this was the industry being asked, what should be priority for government in terms of the industry? And you can see transformation is right at the bottom. There's a small green slide right at the bottom. So in a sense, this is an indicator of the extent to which transformation is supposed to be taken seriously in the industry. The industry puts a number of other issues, which themselves are important, but again, in terms of prioritization, we would say that transformation is to sit low in terms of what they are asking government to do. Our chair on this slide, again, here was just then saying, on the basis of this, the council has then taken a number of strategic objectives, and it is, as part of its marketing drive, making the industry and South Africa aware that it seeks to be a partner in the transformation process, in conducting research, in gathering knowledge, in developing various tools which will assist the industry and South Africans to take the process of transformation going forward. It also seeks to identify levers, particularly in the public sector, where through issues like procurement, we should be able as government to be able to bring about change. Noting that the Act makes adherence to the Charter for the private sector voluntary, but for government it is compulsory. So what must be the tools, what must be the knowledge, what must be the instrument through which we, together with the Council and the Department, one, are able to try and drive transformation within the Department itself and its public entity, but also within the rest of government. You would know that government officials travel a lot, they move around the country a lot. So at the level of travel, how do we ensure that when they procure travel, they bring about change? We arrange for meetings quite a lot, issues around catering, and we procure quite a number of other things related, one, to the tourism industry, but broader, and how can we assist in bringing about change in this process with the partners that we have. But also encouraging the private sector to bring about change, and also recognizing that the issue of transformation, as we have said on numerous occasions, is a strategic business issue. If you leave out 80% of the population of South Africa from participating in the tourism industry, at one level, one, you are assisting in terms of growth of the economy, but at the same time, especially for international tourists who want to see the diversity of the country, you would have been leaving out a unique selling point, because again, the culture of South Africa is one of our unique selling points, and we should be using it as an enabling tool, but also the diversity that people can bring into business based on their world experiences, culture, and other knowledge which they could take advantage of. And we would want to say, for example, we think that some businesses, for example, like two of us and others, have seen the benefit of this. If you go to or Tambo Airport, a number of other airports in the country, and you are buying in places like out of Africa, after all, the products in there are mainly created by our people, largely the second economy, and we think that they should be having greater benefit in the value in this value chain, because those goods are sold at relatively higher prices to what they get once these things have been procured in the mainly rural areas and brought to urban areas and retail shops like the airport at Rosebank and other craft markets. I think that the Charter Council also seeks to put forward a number of mechanisms, and we will speak to a few of these chapters which seek to encourage change in the industry. With the baseline study that we've spoken about, Chair, we began looking at last year. Because the council then said itself, if we are to bring about transformation, we need to know what is the status in the industry. And if we look at the targets which are in the charter, both for 2009 and 2014, then how far are we for each of the seven attributes in the scorecard, and then what must then be done? And to do this, obviously, you need a study to be undertaken. And part of looking at the study, Chair, was to also ensure that your methodology as well as your sample size were rigorous enough to ensure that you could make sufficient generalization, both at the subsector level, but also looking at the provinces, and we'll speak to this shortly. The scope of the study covered large listed and unlisted tourism businesses, a number of small, medium, and micro enterprises. We looked at performance across the seven sectors. We looked at performance by subsectors, which is accommodation, hospitality, travel, and travel. And we looked at trends per province. We were seeking a 95% confidence level with regards to the study, as well as different segmentations across subsectors. And in terms of the total samples required, we needed to do about 320. We needed 3,224 respondents from provinces and subsectors, and then segmentation by provinces. Out of the total sample would be 1,348, and then we require 502 responses from subsectors for us to have a confidence level of 95%. So, on this table here, these are companies over 10 million, making turnover of over 10 million. On this table, we show you per province, we show you by subsector, and we total on the extreme right, we total the findings per province, and at the bottom we have totaled the subsector, and then also totaled by totaled across subsectors. You would see, not surprisingly, that the big provinces are like Western Cape, Gauteng, and KZN have the bigger figure because we have the bigger tourism plans in these provinces. And then at the bottom we have multiple provinces. This is where you would have companies which sit in more than one province where you would have done interviews. For example, Southern Sands on the Holiday Inn, and a number of companies, AVs, Imperial and others, that you find sitting across the country. The number of entities here was 156. And Jefferson, they say that the aggregate here is 28. The value of the companies together is almost 29 billion rand. And this is where, in a sense, as part of the work of the council, if you bring about change here, or use these companies at the higher end of the industry to bring about change, we could then begin the process going forward. And then for companies between 5 and 10 million, Shepherd, again, if you look, KZN is the highest over there. KZN and Western Cape, then of course followed by Gauteng, and in the other provinces, it's a smaller sample. Safe to say, of course, this is a sample, and in any research process, you don't necessarily cover all companies, but we are saying that this gives us a a 95% confidence level, we think that we have covered the country as broadly as we can. Chairperson, for small, medium enterprises, because at the time we were doing this research, there was a lot of talk about where the codes of good practice were going. Some companies said that you really need to interview us. After all, you might be exempted, and you know that the codes of good practice have exempted companies 5 million and below. But we did interview a number of companies in this area. We interviewed 3,296 of them. Unfortunately, we didn't put that slide up. And the turnover in that area is 2.6 billion rand. And then for those between 5 and 10 million, their value is 8.8 billion rand. So this in a sense gives, and there were 256 companies interviewed in that area. This in a sense gives you the value of the industry, as we're talking just over 30 billion rand. Now, there were a number of issues, and on this slide we are showing three things. One of the most challenging areas of change, and on the left-hand side what we have are the seven factors on the tourism charter and scorecard. We ask companies, what are the most challenging issues? What has been your past focus? What have you been looking at? And what are you going to be doing in the future? The most challenging, based on the slide above, would have been is ownership. And when we look at what people have been concentrating on in the past, it refers to us to the issue of skills. And what is going to be concentrated on in the future, we are told, will be skill development as well. Safe to say, sir, that the Charter Council, in between 2005 and 2009, has said, if you concentrate on human resource issues, hopefully you would, and you see the minister in his speech at Indaba raise the fact that black managers are a major challenge at the executive level going up. Would that if, as you get more black people getting into the higher echelons of companies, hopefully it will impact on employment equity, skills development, strategic management. And then between 2009 and 2014, once you have black people who in sufficient numbers at higher levels of companies who can run this company, then that would have a concomitant impact on things like ownership. We believe that companies would feel more confident now to hopefully and involve themselves in ownership dealing with these people. And we think that there is then a greater opportunity for people themselves to become entrepreneurs, and the issues around procurement could also hopefully be speeded up. So we will also use this slide to also then develop strategies going forward in terms of areas of work that we need to do within the industry. Here, we then on this slide, with red being poor performance, moderate performance in yellow, and excellent performance being in green. And poor performance means that aggregate scores were only in the range of 30 to 50% performance. Moderate performance with people doing between 50 to 80% of performance, and excellent performance being 80 to 100. In other words, in terms of the extent of transformation, if you are in green, then high levels of transformation, and yellow, moderate, and poor would be you'd be only between below 30 to 50%. And so if you look at this slide in particular, again, it gives us food for thought in terms of what we need to be, where are the areas in which we need to do well. Three poor under small and micro. And here, when we say not applicable under ownership, it is based on the present charter and scorecard in the tourism industry, which says that businesses below 5 million would not be required to deal with the ownership indicator. Of course, we are aware that the codes of good practice absorb businesses of 5 million and below from all the factors of the charter, and then between 5 and 25 million, 25 million is 4. They have to choose 4 indicators, and above that, all the 7 indicators. So, Chair, these are just the findings, and again, even if it says moderate, I think there's quite a bit of work that we need to do in this area. And larger and listed companies, we look at ownership and strategic representation, and we say there's a problem here. And the larger listed, it's only around employment equity and skill development and social development. But we would then, of course, need to be worried that we're not developing enough enterprises, nor are these companies sufficiently procuring from our black businesses. And part of what we understand speaking to the industry is that they tend to centralize their procurement, and of course if you do that, it would not be surprising that you would procure less from up-and-coming businesses. And also, you would not necessarily then procure from where you are located. That might be the Holiday Inn in Bloemfontein, but if the procurement is driven from Johannesburg, then I don't necessarily develop businesses in the Bloemfontein area. So this is another issue that we are taking up together with provinces and the industry, saying that there is a need for local economic development going forward. Chairperson, here we give the scores, aggregate scores with regards to transformation by subsector. Again, if you look at this slide, you see quite a variance. Most of the figures in the 40s, except in accommodation, we see that they are over 68%. Hospitality, we see it's around enterprise development. Travel, we also see around enterprise development. Social development, they are over the 70s. And then overall, that drives those two factors are going up to 66% and 67%. So there are problems, Chairperson, if you look across on the six other sectors. And across the subsector, it also then means that we then begin to target the subsector. So we don't necessarily only look at overall. We then say, if in accommodation it's only 44%, what are the issues? Some people may say, well, it may be because we have a lot of B&Bs, and if these B&Bs, people have used their houses, it may be reluctant then to say a husband and wife, then have ownership of their house with somebody else. But then we say, well, but then they could procure, they could train their workers. So we begin to bring this strategy together and say, yes, we may not necessarily insist on changing ownership in terms of B&Bs, but why are you not procuring? Why are you not improving your procurement? Why are you not helping communities around your lodges in terms of arts and crafts, for them to come and sell their arts and crafts in your lodges, for them to do tours into the neighboring areas for tourists who come into the country? So there's a lot of work that can be done in this area that we as a council, as well as the department through the Children's Enterprise Program, are beginning to look at. So this slide is again the aggregate score, which is just what we've spoken about, looking at the different factors, again, looking at the aspect chart going forward, and it is a reflection of the previous chart, where we say enterprise development and social development seem to be the one where, in general, most of the work has been done. Then, in terms of conclusion, Chair, we're saying that and this, you may argue, is at variance from one of the very first slides we showed, where the industry was saying government must, you know, in terms of the priorities of government, transformation was not high on the agenda. Safe to say, Chair, we are constantly interacting with the industry. These issues were raised at the April 17 consultative conference. The minister raised this at Indaba. So the issue is on the agenda constantly. We raised it at our field conference last year. And to the extent that the industry is a core signatory to the charter, there is an understanding that there has to be transformation. So there is a positive attitude, we can say, largely. But the proof of the pudding is in the tasting. We have shown the figures, and we think that there is more work to be done. There is a variance across provinces, and there is a variance also across subsectors. But we are saying that if you look at what the charter and scorecard say, they are dates 2009 and 2014. And one of the reasons why we put two dates was to say, we couldn't wait and say to the industry, you would only report back to us on your state of change in 2013 or 2014. That gives you a milestone to work towards, especially as we prepare for 2010. What would you have done? And so we take overall targets and subdivide them. And so we're saying that what we may just be hovering around our 40% mark, and it must be taken with this point. There isn't enough transformation. However, based on the charter, there has been some progress made. We have just completed, Chairperson, the skills audit based on the conference that we held last year. Indeed, it is also saying that work has been done in the area of skills, but again, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to ensure that not only do we have black people being the majority at the lower end of the industry, but we've got to get them across all the way to the highest levels of the industry. Then the challenges that we have going forward have been the uncertainty around what is the relationship between the codes of good practice and our charter and scorecard. You would know, as we stated, that the codes were only gazetted on the 17th of February this year. When we held our conference on the 17th of April, there were also discussions as to whether there would be need to be any changes in our charter and scorecard in relation to the codes of good practice. We would want to note that the codes make provision for sectoral dissemination. And therefore, in the tourism industry, feel that there are areas in the codes of good practice that, if we took lock, stock, and barrel, would not drive transformation sufficiently in our industry. We need to bear this in mind. And this, you know, the whole issue of the thresholds for what who is exempted are just an example of what we need to protect. Then, small, medium, and micro enterprises have indicated that they have challenges with regard to access to capital, finding partners, and issues around executive talent. Again, here, sir, would want to say we are in the next few weeks going to be doing a presentation to the financial services charter colleagues. And here, we're not only speaking to banks, but we're speaking to the, you know, microfinance, insurance companies, and others, and begin to make the point to them about the importance of, one, making people aware of what they have to offer, but also looking at the conditions that they require when they put finance forward. And it, we want to say that we were very enthused at Endava, the First National Bank, when we went last year. It was only Astra at Endava, but we had a huge stand for the First National Bank there. They are also, because they are one of the sponsors of the 2010 World Cup, have taken a bigger interest in tourism. Last week we met with Standard Bank. They have felt that they're out of the loop, and they are interested in finding out where they can grow the economy and, of course, make their profit. And so we'll have to then get the fourth partner in this case, NetBank. They're already involved somehow through green trust issues and others, but we've got to get them more visible in the banking to create competition, hopefully to reduce costs by the bank, but it will also indeed make it easier for finance. And they're bringing in innovative methods to the table, especially noting the challenges that we have. They also are noting the peculiarities of the industry, particularly in money. They are aware that many a time, especially getting to winter season, like now, there are challenges around occupancy and the number of tourists coming to the country. And therefore, they would look at ways of assisting with this particular matter. One of the other issues is also cell phone banking and ensuring that they people at ATMs are able to use other languages. And how do we assist particularly small arts and crafts enterprises who are on the roadside across the country? If a foreign tourist comes, and they have a credit card or have foreign currency, how can we ensure that they don't lose the stay because they did not have the necessary equipment to be able to do the transaction? Chair, we're also saying that transformation needs to be visible and powerful, especially with regards to issues around ownership and strategic representation. Some of the lessons learned, Chairperson, the industry is largely dominated by small players. But we know that they only contribute 80% to the tourism economy. However, then the large players are 20%, but they generate 80%. So again, the 20% hard work and 20% innovation and 80% hard work that people talk about sometimes. What then does this mean? Where then do we concentrate in bringing about change? The council itself has had many debates saying that should we concentrate therefore then 80% of our effort on 20% of these players, and hopefully it will be a snowball effect. Also noting that there was a study done last year, Chairperson, around regulation impact assessment, and apparently the tourism industry has the highest amount of regulation that an industry has to face. From, when you have transportation, looking at the licenses you require, health and safety regulations, then of course now there's the DEE requirement. But people say, nevertheless, if people are going to use your transportation, foreign tourists, and we know there was a huge debate around the road accident fund, and if you're not insured, what then happens? If somebody comes to your B&B and falls in the bathroom, what is going to happen? So these are important things that we have to note, that as part of the global family, we can't say, well, you come to South Africa and not be insured. There are EU laws around this. The Japanese have laws around this. In travel agencies, you must have a certain amount of deposit and so on and so forth. Of course, on the side of government, the question that becomes, what must we do to assist people to ensure that regulatory impact doesn't kill people? The majority of SME players, we are told, are marginal and are not making excessive profits. But the argument still remains. Do we then say, because you are not making profit, we then exempt you from all the seven factors of transformation? Or we could say, yes, indeed, we exempt you from some, but you could still make a difference. And I think the important point that must also be made here is that transformation is not only for white business. We would be very concerned if black SMEs and black business believe that they would not undertake skills development. We are aware that the Department of Labor yesterday spoke to the issue about employment equity in this country and some players not being involved. If they are not going to give other small businesses opportunities in terms of procurement and would only procure from abroad. So we are saying that this is required for all businesses. And that indeed, if black businesses lead by example, I think it even begins to encourage other businesses to look at this matter as well. We said, businesses are largely family-owned, therefore it would not be surprising that people who want to keep these issues in the family. Again, we say there is nothing wrong with that, but we say there are other areas. We know that you can't do everything as a lodge owner. You can't have your own food garden and all these other things. Look around the community that you are involved in and see how you can have backward and forward linking. What about providing some of your time to assist up-and-coming businesses, be it with communication, developing their brochures, and so on and so forth? We know that, yes, management control is rest with owners, but we say that you could look at some of the other factors to bring about change. The issue of lack of ability to pay for skilled resources. We also, from our skills research, people also say we can't have our workers as SME being away from the business too long during the day to go for training. But of course, if you are going to ask me to go for training as a waiter in the evening after I've been standing on my feet the whole day, it is unlikely that I would concentrate in the class, have the motivation and enthusiasm to do that. So there has to be a halfway point where we meet each other on this. How can people learn on the job? How can people use IT to learn? How can we develop case studies where we encourage people to see how other people have done it? I mean, we can take examples like places like here, Thousand Stars, with the partnership with Guest Houses in Soweto, and say, here is how other people have done it. You don't have to go and reinvent the wheel. You can learn from what they have done. Follow-through work, giving management time, mentoring, networking, introducing people to other companies, getting people to join tourism associations and those associations themselves providing the way forward. The issue of finance, level of pertinent financial data lacking, and here again, Chairperson, the whole issue of how do we begin to collect information in a much more systematic fashion. One must say sometimes the industry says, no, we've done too much research, you always come to us and collect figures. But we also know there is a fear in the industry that What about the issue of confidentiality? In some industries, there are 4 or 5 big players. Once you begin to collate the results, you're almost able to tell how one company is doing against another. And these are some of the challenges that they put before, which makes it a challenge for us in terms of collecting data going forward. How do we convince people that by doing research, we would also, as government, one, be able to look at what policy initiatives we undertake, but it also helps us, indeed, in developing products, but also knowing where we're doing well and ensuring that we continue to keep our emphasis there. And then, of course, there is the whole issue of barriers to entry, especially in the capital-intensive part of the industry. This would be particularly in your travel, the travel sub-sector, software, the kind of software, GDS, and others, that is required in this area, the deposits that IATA requires, and of course the gaming industry as well, where, it's mainly big players, casino licenses, and so on and so forth. Say here, we take specific, for large and listed enterprises, the kind of finances, the kind of issues they have around ownership. It's how the putting together of equity deals. We know that there were some innovative deals in mining, in the tourism sector. It's been a time. There have been a few big deals, thousand times, a number of others. We know that two of them is talking about deals on the table. We know Piedmont did a deal with Noom going forward. The question is, how do we also begin to say there are other parts of the industry? We shouldn't just look at the large hotel group. Could we look at transportation? Could we look at people who supply the industry? What about in the procurement area? What about supplying paper to hotels? Because there's a whole huge area of procurement. These are just some of the areas we need to look at. People don't want to change. People say, I've been getting my chicken from Rainbow Chicken for a long time. Why should I now begin to take the risk and get new suppliers on board? How am I sure about the quality and issues like that? So these are some of the issues that, we are finding on the ground. The centralization of procurement itself means that if I'm a large procurer, I can bring the prices down. If I procure from too many small businesses, and there's a whole paperwork, the payment, and all these other issues. These are some of the things that are being raised with us. Could we then, in a way, then begin to say to smaller businesses, well, come together, create some kind of association or cooperative going forward if you're going to supply a system. This is one of the things we need to look at. We need to look going forward. The whole issue of logistics. We've raised the issue of quality also, which we think you need to work on. You can't, if you're going to get new suppliers, or even the suppliers that you have today, necessarily indicate to us that at one level you didn't mention them. The issues of training we've raised. But the industry also says that there's a lot of poaching. You train people, you invest a lot in training people, somebody else then picks them up. We are told about high level of turnover. Somebody has been trained, they don't stay long with the company, there's a better offer, they move on. So I think we would also need to go back and begin to say, yes, as much as people must build their own careers, we must also encourage people who have had investment in them to begin to look at creating stability and staying in companies, because then it defeats the whole purpose of what we were talking about way forward. Of course, on the side of government, we're working with a number of international partners looking at how we can create opportunities for mid-level career professionals and others to go to countries like the United Kingdom, India, the UAE, Holland, and others, so that they can get experience in those countries and then come back and hopefully then move up in the ranks. We've spoken about training, quality of people who are trained. There are a lot of unemployed graduates coming out. But we're finding out from the studies that we have done, people are saying it's not the fact that you have a certificate from the University of Pretoria, which is important. They're talking about experience. You need to have experience. This is an industry in which you talk about relationships. You need to have done it in a particular way. We say, yes, experience is important. But the world is changing. And therefore, there has to be a combination of the two. You can't just rely on experience that you gain. In 1970, the world has changed since then. IT wasn't important in those days. You were looking at particular markets. Now we're talking about 75% of our tourists coming from the African continent. So there's a whole issue around diversity and a number of other things. That experience itself might not be sufficient going forward. So I think the issues around small and micro enterprises, as we have said, ownership, lack of involvement of black people in terms of ownership, and even though we've tried to use employee shareholder scheme, for small enterprises, this can be the case. We said initially they are owned largely by owner-managers, so you can't, you know, the risk, and if it's in BNB, it's difficult to divide ownership across people who are not in the family. There's low profitability. The issue of finding black partners, and we'll talk about some of the work we're doing in this area around databases, and the fact that equity is tightly held, and people have taken their life savings, other people have taken their pensions, going forward working in this area. Market knowledge around suppliers, again, the issue of databases becomes important in this area. Fragmentation and the large market of smaller enterprises. I think we've said before also, maybe suppliers themselves or small enterprises don't speak enough to each other. We've got to bring people together. And we've said, as we've said in the past also, the issues around time, the issues around having to join associations, high-level competition, low margins, risk, identity, are just part of the challenges they find from other business owners. So we've spoken about employment equity. This sector also faces high level of poaching. Low level of staff turnover would be at the bottom in this industry, not at the top, obviously, because it's more difficult to find jobs in this area. People stay for long. And maybe also because they don't do skills development, people can't move up. I get into a small enterprise as a driver or a cleaner, it's hard for me to move up. And we see that the Department of Labor has had a sectoral determination in this area yesterday, talking about minimum wages of 1,460 to about 1,650. We are sure that the industry is going to raise a number of issues around this, and we'll be interested in debating with them what it means having to go forward and the impact it will have on the other areas of transformation that we've spoken about. We've spoken about lack of career development, because this business is effective, is run from day to day. And if you are an owner, manager, there are many other things that you don't deal with. And as we said, they would prefer that people deal dealt with skill development after work. This is difficult. And we're also aware that, of course, in terms of the seeker, many smaller micro enterprises are unable to contribute to less than 50 employees. The threshold for contributions or their payroll would not meet what is required by the seeker. So it becomes also difficult for them to move forward in terms of training. Centers of solutions. We note what the codes of good practice have on the table in terms of exemption. We are in the process of aligning the charter with the code. The council has had meetings and they're in the process of advising the minister in terms of how to take this matter forward. We've had widespread consultation with the industry on this particular matter, starting from February this year, when there was a workshop in Johannesburg, and between February and April, we've been to each of the 9 provinces where we've had meetings indicating the process of aligning the code of good, I mean our charter with the code of good practice, not only on the issues of exemption, but also our targets, the language which we use in our charter, it might be different from the code. And we also say here that if we were to exempt most of the businesses, if we were to follow the code on this issue of 5 million, then the majority of businesses in this sector would not be transformed. This is an issue for debate. And that the code also presents an opportunity for small business to choose 4 out of the 7 indicators. And what we are saying is that this would then, of course, mean that what then do we recommend in terms of out of this code that people don't just choose any 4? We've indicated that we would want certain, you know, especially the human resource issues to be part of what people do not exempt themselves from. From the side of government, it's the whole issue of how you use our procurement lever in particular for transformation at executive level. We think that the other level, we think that, you know, the legislative as well as the judicial arm of government also are large procurers procurers of services and goods, and that this issue of transformation, that we should all, you know, lead on this process. The issue of also, I think, public hearings like this chairperson, providing information to the public on these issues, the whole awareness building. And certainly this year, the department, in this financial year, we intend to undertake 45 awareness meetings or public hearings, five for each of the 9 provinces, where we'll be dealing not only with transformation issues, but the whole issue of opportunity in tourism. We held a huge SME workshop at Indaba, over 400 SMEs, but we not only spoke about transformation, we spoke about the skills study, we spoke about opportunities for 2010 and the upcoming workshop in June, national workshop on opportunities for 2010, but the 2010 team is also going to go around the provinces, and particularly procurement of non-hotel accommodation going forward to ensure that SMEs benefit from the 2010 opportunities. And the 2010, the LOC also indicated that they have quite an amount of money put forward for procurement as well as bringing about opportunities for SMEs. And the whole issue of building stadium and all that would itself provide opportunity for people to engage in transformation. Chairperson, there is the whole issue of training, and as we said, we've just completed a skills audit. We are in the process of now putting the implementation plan forward and trying to ensure that through the skills process, communities, youth, women, the disabled are given opportunities moving forward. The whole issue of the second economy and how we integrate the first and second economy is a major plank for what we are doing going forward. And some of the initiatives that we have in the department, we'll be looking at having thousands of youth being part of what we call tourism ambassadors. This is under what we call our volunteers program for 2010 going forward. Okay, I'm just in my last few slides. I think for the private sector, we indicate that we are going to, from the Charter Council, there's going to be the issue of reporting annually. We are going to assist them through creating of databases for procurement, for black talent, as well as highlighting and giving awards to those who are excellent performers under tourism. As well as collaborative marketing, looking at how they can work together with smaller enterprises, initiating in-house training and a number of other activities. We are also then saying also that this can't be a one-way street. Black people themselves need to be organized. They need to look at how they join tourism associations. They need to be professional in the way that they themselves undertake business. Because we are saying this issue of tourism is business. It's entrepreneurship. We can't have a situation that people will just sit back and say there's entanglement around it. There's hard work to be done. There's got to be professionals, and there's got to be a quality of service, there's got to be customer service, and there are training opportunities that we are putting on the table. And that's why when we held the SME workshop, we were happy that most of the SMEs that came to Indaba participated in the workshop. There's also the issue of ITA itself, ensuring that it is on track with the kind of things that it has to undertake going forward. Chairperson, on this slide, we just indicate some of the database issues. We've spoken about creating databases, also for corporate social investment opportunities, recognizing enterprises that have done well. And of course, the whole issue of verification and then self-assessment, it's a tool we have on the website where people can go and self-assess themselves. Then the step-by-step process, it tells them how they can determine how far they are with regard to the work that they're doing. And then in the tourism branch itself, there's a tourism enterprise program where government has given 185 million rand to the tourism enterprise program, working with business trust going forward, looking at some of the work that we're doing in business linkages, exhibition assistance. We had over 200 SMEs at Indaba this year. We take them not only to Indaba, but to ICD in Germany in March and World Travel Market in the United Kingdom, and we're looking at a number of other fairs now. We canceled beers in Holland, we took them to Japan last year. We're looking at other fairs where SMEs can have a bigger benefit. The skills audit we've spoken about, shared is foreign language training. And then, of course, we are in the process of finalizing our tourism second economy. So we'll be looking at a number of interventions around mentoring, marketing, product development, route development, and association development.
Thank you very much, Dr.
McCool.
I'm sure that I have before we take questions, I think let's know the questions, both who are having a time. I'd like to invite Mr. Mahemi from the Money Side Committee to talk to us after that, so we can take questions from the
side. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, member of the committee, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Eric Mahemi. I'm general manager of Morningside Cottage. It's a four-star guest house situated in the Constantia Valley, precisely in Kukai. And I'm here to give myself out what I think can be done in the empowerment of Black South African tourism industry. I've been in the industry since 2003, and allow me to tell you that I'm doing very well. 2 years ago, the owner wanted to sell the business because we had only 40% occupancy. And I asked her, at the back there, to give me another year because after 2 years of experience in the industry, I could feel that we were going to get somewhere if we put more effort. And I worked quite hard, and at the moment, our occupancy is about plus minus 80%. And we don't really have like a low season anymore. Last winter we had like plus minus 60% occupancy. And at the moment I'm in the process to start my own guest house. What I think must be done in the tourism sector for the empowerment of Black South Africans is firstly to conscientize the black people, as Montelli said just now. That means to let them know what it is all about and how they can become empowered. It's not only by giving a job or giving a shares of a company to someone that you will empower a person. A person must know what he or she is going to do. Some examples of what happened in some countries where the black empowerment was not done really very well. Like Zimbabwe and the Congo, and we know all of what was the result. And I think that in the tourism industry, especially in the hospitality sector, a lot must be done to encourage us to open businesses in what was called, in a sense, that white area. In fact, today most of black B&Bs are located in the township. Every time I meet a black person on the B&B or restaurant, they are located in the township. And I'm not saying that we must not have hospitality businesses in the township, but it must be everywhere. An example is that I met a gentleman in one of the workshops. He owned a restaurant in Kailicha. And I asked him to give me direction to his restaurant so that I can come there with some friends. And he told me that before to go there, I must first phone him. And I asked him, I tell you that busy? He said, no, it's just that my restaurant is at the place that you must first phone, we must expect you to come there. And automatically I was a little bit scared to go there, because I could understand that the gentleman was telling me that his restaurant is a place where it's not very safe to go. And automatically I never went there. And something else is that when I meet some other black people. So I'm saying that I'm planning to open a guest house in Constantia. Most of them, they like ask me if I think that it will gonna work as a black person having a guest house in Constantia if people will really come and stay there. And I told them that like for 2 years now I've been a B&B owner because the owners that are sitting at the back there, they gave me full to run the business at 100%. I'm the one doing everything, and when the people live in Canada, sometimes they think that I'm the owner, but I'm black, and that's not even a problem. And at the moment, we have like 50% of returning people. That means that they're very happy to come back there. And I think that the BE must really put the target high and help us not to be only partners or employers, but to be a competition to the white-owned companies, especially in the hospitality sector. And maybe you ask me how that can be done. And I think that we must really try to find out how many black people are really already involved in the hospitality industry, and try to see as well how many other black people would like to come in the industry, and try to see how we can help them to go forward. Because I think that all that is really something of the people must really want to do something. It's not that they must just think that there's some money involved there and they just go to get the money and then they do nothing. And talking about the 2010, I think that the big issue that we're going to face is to be accommodation. Because, as you know, Africa is a continent of football. And South Africa will be the first country to host the World Cup, the World Soccer Cup. And all the neighbor countries, it's easy to come to South Africa. They can just drive down. Some of them will fly. But I can promise you that we will not have enough accommodation for these people. Today, people are just focusing on stadium building and creating jobs for people building stadiums. But you must think about all these people from Africa who come down to South Africa to watch the World Cup. Some of them, I'm sure, they will be sleeping even on the street, because I'm not sure that we're going to have enough accommodation for all these people. So I think we must really focus on that, isn't it? And I will just end my speech in thanking everybody who helped me to come here, especially Rachel and Nicholas Edwards, who trusted me and gave me the business to run for 4 years now. And Yasha Dotson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mark. Can I pronounce your name correctly?
Yeah, it's Mark Hemlin. Yeah, correct.
We can take some questions now. Thank you for the very precise
Chair, thank you very much. I would like to ask, the question of the 2080 principles raised, whether you maybe have any information with regard to the employment figures in the top 20% where prisoners are generated and employment in the 80%. Maybe you can give us that at a later stage. I'm sure we don't specifically have that now. But what I think, Chair, is very important with regard to transformation of two basic things, and the one is finance and the other one is training. I would very much like to hear at a later stage, and I believe the presenter said that they're going to have a meeting with the banks so that they can actually move forward on providing people with cash to actually start these businesses, or if you don't have a situation just listen to. People must at least have the finances to actually start these businesses, whether it's in the white areas or black areas or wherever the case might be. So I think the government needs to assist as far as that's concerned, even if it's through the banks. And secondly, the thing that, which is very necessary is training. And it concerns me, Chair, the presenter says that CHET has been on millions and millions of rands on not giving them the service as far as training is concerned. And I think, this committee needs to get CHET here and tell them, that we're not satisfied with the position with regard to the training that they providing to these people that have been starting their own businesses and starting particularly businesses in the tourism industry.
Thank you very much.
It is very evident that skills shortage, experience, and finance is a great challenge in the tourism sector for aspiring entrepreneurs. According to research, Chair, it appears that more and more black people are now beginning to enroll in institutions that cater for off-road schools in travel and tourism and hospitality sector. But it is also noted that these numbers are low, relatively low. And therefore, I think the focus should be in providing assistance and incentives and encouragement for more and more people to enroll, especially from the black community, because transformation targets and goals and scorecard will never look right. We will never achieve that until and unless at that level we don't make any progress. Research shows also that approximately 90% of scarce skills in the tourism industry that at the high skills level best. Now, my colleague raised the issue of theater. I want to ask the department, are they up to the challenge, really, seriously? Because you can't impose a score and a goal and a target on an industry when you cannot give them the required people with the required skills to fill those targets. Second question I want to ask you. How efficient or how effective is the relationship and working relationship between the department and the local authorities? Because the local authorities have to come to the table, they have to play a very significant role in the development of tourism. Are they investing enough in terms of infrastructure in the black areas for tourists? What are they doing to make it possible for tourism to develop in that sector? Thank you. And to Eric, what did you do differently that increased the occupancy level from 40%, as you said, 2 years ago, to what is now the current 80% occupancy rate? What initiatives or what did you put in place? What did you bring it up there? Thank you.
The reason I say on the advantage in respect of Twitter. I don't know if I can deliver the point. We must take Twitter here because we cannot be sitting on piles and piles of money without a country. Because we keep on measuring each India and the GTA on this sort of transformation and trade and finance, the money is being collected by another agencies, which appears very uncomfortable. I know 3 years ago here, they gave a very eloquent account of how good boys and girls were, but it appeared not to be true. That's number one. Number two, it's a bit of a tangential question, and it's going to cause a bit of an embarrassment to Dr. Macho. I want to know, why is it that the Portfolio Committee was not invited to the tourism and government? That we just read that from the media. I mean, it's just embarrassment. It's a huge thing like that. And we are excited over this. In the sea, and here we are supposed to be calling the industry that is supposed to go and make an exhibit and show the world how good they are. And it's part of our oversight. Now, we pull them to come here, and they are nowhere to be found. Except one or two brothers and entrepreneurs that are here now. Thank you, Mr. Mohammed has said, he's a lady here. The people are supposed to come here, not here. We are supposed to see them there. Now, you, Dr. McKay, as a DPG of tourism, have assisted unwittingly that those people might escape accountability by not informing us to ensure that they're happy with it. Because we are not just there to receive, you know, offer presentations in acquisition groups. We are supposed to go out in the field. So that means the field. Follow me. The third point to the money that you have. Every year, you know, the treasury gives out money and then it gets appropriated. We have a particular committee supposed to vote that you have spent that money. Now, part of your budget is for transformation and so on. I want to know, quite apart from Peter, what you as a department are doing, or as a division, as a branch of things, are doing. For the word of mine in the pocket, Mr. Vita and the chapters of Petroleum to us, and the Parliament gives you the money. It is there in your own pocket. What do you do with that money to ensure that you do what Peter cannot do? Number three, local government is hardly mentioned in this big task force. And they have a cool thing. Tourists and people come in, they go to the township and fight each other, they are there on the ground. So we seem to be flying a very big kite that is on the surface of the ground. And I think we're missing the boat here. You are an excellent leader, very eloquent, and you mean well. But it does appear that we just have to work hard to assist you to achieve all these goals. So 2010 is going to come here like a conveyor belt, and before we know it, you know, our people shall have made millions and billions. And, you know, finally, without supposed cooking. The tax industry, the short left, we've said it time before the system again, that the short left is a campaign that was meant to activate domestic troubles. But the black sector, particularly the operators of the industry, they did not plug into it. That's the ground it was taken over by big boys. And in general, it's always a big success, but it's a success that's not meant just engineered by people who are not supposed to participate at that level because they are already participating in higher levels. Now, until we rope in the taxi industry, I've made an appeal many times again, call the National Taxi Association again and say they must not fight for Comita Kitse where the journalism don't. There's another big change in the policy thing. They must buy into the short-term campaign. They can make millions there. But why is that not happening? Mr. Mahagany, you started very well. You're actually a role model in terms of black excellence. Now, we see you're going to be studying all business. Now, I want to know, don't you think there's going to be a distortion of a model that in terms of partnering with the white entrepreneurs who embraced you and you did an excellent job with one of your shops, you know, you just give them a little chance and then you turn things around. Now you want to leave. Is it because of painful severance or is it because of other play? Because then that model is going to be distorted. That's okay, you have guys, pick them up on the street, rope them in, and then they build your business, and from there then they keep the ladder by which they climb. Now I just want to know what you're going to do. And then, finally, the other government departments, you see, and this leads to something else. You, Dr. McClure, when you organize all these big conferences, why do you go to the ICC all the time? Because everyone goes to the ICC. International Convention Center is the easiest thing. Glamorous is heaven on earth. Now, why don't you put the manual markets? Why don't you aggressively go and get this little BEB, BND, bring them there to become part of that thing, you know, because you are using the money that they give you to organize like this, and then you take the pocket of coal to your castle. So if you know that the tourism contract, you can almost imagine it's going to be some huge glamorous place. And that human development is by itself not being transformed itself.
Thank you, Chair. Basically, I'm covered by most of the questions, and I simply echo the same sentiments when it comes to
Chica.
I just want to sort of clarify with Mahemani in terms of his relationship. Is the relationship that of an employer-employee, or is it of a partnership? And if it is of a partnership, what percentage of the company do you own? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think I've largely been covered, but I just wondered, had I never travelled and been a tourist, I think it would be almost impossible for me to get into the industry in any way, even to think of starting to run an SMME. And I just wondered if there is anything in the charter that actually stresses mentorship as far as the established and successful CMDs or SMMEs to assist those who are entering the industry, entering the market, and who are going to make the same mistakes over and over unless they get the sort of hands-on assistance. And maybe the department can't do all of that, but I'm sure they wouldn't even need to be in the same area or regarded as competition by an established company, but some form of assistance and mentorship from the established companies to those who are struggling to get into the business. That's the one thing. I mean, how do you assist small operators to become more efficient and effective? I mean, what is the department doing about that? To assist them in understanding what works for tourists, what are their fears, what are their needs, what backup assistance, what do they do if in a small but established B&B, if they have a tourist saying they're getting into trouble, who loses all his documents, or is there any sort of documentation that comes from the department saying this very sort of hands-on stuff, saying this is what you do if this happens. I mean, I went to Kuala Lumpur the first night there, I lost my bag finished and I lost everything. Well, there wasn't much there in Kuala Lumpur to help me. I spent the whole night in the police station trying to get assistance. So, I mean, it happens in other countries. I just wondered, thirdly, if the department has any idea of whether it was students who are doing tourism as a school subject, what are the numbers of those students who actually enter the industry, and is what they are learning there useful stuff? Because, I mean, they are at school. Does the department look at their curricula and have any role to play in saying, well, I don't think they should be doing that, and I think that this would be a really useful subject for them that they could, in fact, use it almost immediately because it's sought after in the industry. So I'm just to get an idea of what are the sought after skills and how to enable students to get them. If there are bridging courses that they can, once they've done it as a school subject, how can they actually get into the industry? What do they have to sell as themselves, as young people? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mark. Maybe to tie up this particular round so that we can move on to the agenda. I would like to ask a few other questions. One, could you say more on some of the improvements, Dr. Mark, of transformation? What extra instruments do we want to use to deploy, not to send to the transformation? And secondly, this 80% of the industry that contributes 20% of the product, what new measures can we do to expand? Because I think that's also an easy way second economy, popular interventions that can be relevant to many other people. What scope is there for expanding the capability that they need to put in the future? And then, I would like to know how much does the entire government achieve
do with Ethiopia? How much do you do with Ethiopia? Not just in the East. Because you've got Barakita, you've got local government, you've got provincial government. And how much is this? And how much of this go to black owned enterprises? And should we not insist that a particular system is goes and what would be how would that transform the thing? How much do we participate in government enterprises? And then lastly, shouldn't the council develop what we call a feast of preferred issues, such as black participation in such as for the second COVID dimension? Should we not help so that you put also in the our data that any tourist who wants to contribute to go to South Africa, at least does not spend all his money in South Africa. He knows that, at least he's a man, he's the one that saves the water. You can even have good analysis from there, so that people can ask him. Thank you. I know that there are lots of questions, but you can hopefully group some of them and then help us decide.
Chairperson, thank you very much, members. Maybe I should clarify the CETA issue. I'm not sure that I said. Let me put it this way: CETA itself doesn't do trade. The CETA is a quality assurer working together with SACO and other groups to say here are training providers in the tourism industry that we have quality assured to provide a trade. The CETA system is driven by the Department of Labor, and the different CETAs, in a sense, together with labor and through South African Revenue Service, collect levies based on payroll calculations that people pay. Companies then develop wealth or work skills plans, and those, in a sense, should form what we call the sector skills plan of what training are there. So at one level, the company can do in-house training, claim the money back, or do the training outside and claim the money. So CETA itself doesn't do the training. Unfortunately, many people, when training is not happening, then blame the CETA director. I think maybe I just wanted to make that explanation. Maybe what I said did not come out clear.
No, sir, the point that I then made was that CETA does not pay those companies that pay.
Exactly.
It frustrates them.
Yeah.
Companies form themselves, they keep taking things that are not part of the World Cup, they don't get money from CETA.
They don't get the money.
Yeah. To get the money back.
Companies have to present evidence that they are trained. So, but I was not necessarily, I was explaining the system. If there are problems in the system, then I think as members have said that maybe we should come together with CETA on this matter to clearly understand exactly what the blockage is around. The issue of SMEs, and then we raised the point that they don't need a levy. At a national skills conference in October, this matter arose, and questions were raised around the fact that, of course, training is required at SME level. How then do we get involved in driving that training going forward? There is then something known as the National Skills Fund, discretionary funding, and other mechanisms where training could be provided for SME. And on the 4th of December last year, the Minister of Labor announced a 1 billion rand fund under the NHF for provinces. And provinces in premiers, and this would sit under the premier's offices, would then indicate some of their training needs. And part of that, I think out of 9 provinces, 3 didn't put tourism as a priority. I think it was Gauteng, Northwest, and the Western Cape. And the idea is now for us to work with the provinces so that at least at the level where this training can happen, we are then able to unblock where economic training can happen. The Department of Labor has also informed us that the other avenues through which, together with SMEs, particularly working with local government, we can get opportunities for training, especially internships. And this is something that we are looking together with them, where, for example, if you were starting a new company, you could apply for funds where you would assist unemployed people to get trained. So it's almost like the learnership program that was there before. So the issue, I just to raise that. Our relationship with CETA is one where, together last year, much as we are not directly involved in training, even though we're the line function department, we sat with the Department of Labor and agreed that maybe what we should do is get more involved. We took 7.5 million together with CETA, putting 5 million, and this is the project under which the skills audit has been undertaken. You would remember that at the national conference, there was a declaration that was signed where government, labor, and business, as well as communities, came together. One of the outcomes of that declaration was that we should form what we call the National Tourism Skills Development Forum. And that forum is looking at a number of things, and some of those issues relate to what the needs of SMEs and communities in particular would be. But one of those channels, you asked about curriculum review issues, and there is a subcommittee which is sitting there, which is looking at the curriculum and looking at what must be the changes that must be undertaken with regard to the curriculum. And so this there was also the issue of looking at what are scarce and critical skills required going forward that we should look at in terms of going forward. You would also know that South Africa after 1994, unfortunately, the previous internship program that we had, artisans, you know, where people were, who had work placement, that system has apprenticeship. That system has unfortunately not been kept up. And it's now only with GIPSA that the process of reviving it is being undertaken. So this is an area of work that we are, together with the industry, looking at and saying, when you train tourism students, especially at the university at FET level, there has got to be an element of intention. The industry has made a commitment looking at taking this particular matter forward. So the number of tourism students entering the industry, I'm sure we'll have to go back and check on this. Safe to say, we would all know, and not only the tourism section, but there are thousands of unemployed graduates. And we raised the issue before that. The industry would say, it's all well and good, you've qualified, you've done the theoretical part, but you don't have the practical part of what is required to work in the industry. But the industry is also saying, who must then pay if we have this leadership going for? So I think those are just some of the challenges that we have to look at. And we think that it's a waste of resources to now be double training people. And if we don't get it at the source and ensure that as people are being trained, there's a combination of the practical and theoretical issues, then we are missing the goal. So this is part of the work that we are involved in looking going forward. Then the issue of also within training and SME issues, some of the way in which we assist SMEs. One, at the Indaba, there is a survey done with SMEs, trying to find out what are the issues that they face as challenges. Yes, we brought them to Indaba. Are they doing any business while they're at Indaba? Many people would realize that the first Indaba you go to, or the first WTS you go to, doesn't give you business immediately. There are things that we're also beginning to find out in the industry that, yes, a person would see you and say, well, thank you very much, I've understood what you do. I have ground operators that I'm already working with already. Let us look at the possibility of doing business next. So there's also the consistency of ensuring that we send people to this fair more than once or twice. But recognizing that there's also limited funds. We give people assistance only for three occasions. But we just need to know that. We've also sat with the industry itself and the SMEs and develop what we now call toolkit. People have told us some of the challenges they face. We have developed toolkit, the how-to manual that assists people. And we have this manual in Afrikaans, English, isiZulu, and Setswana. And the idea is that people also have to read this manual. So I think it goes back to the point that was made by the colleague, that which I also had made. People have to understand they are running business. And in many cases, some of the shortfall, and through no fault of the SMEs, is that, yes,
I mean, you know, we've worked with the Umsumbopo Youth Fund, and we are told that the industry, and trust me, would expect that if you were coming to an interview, you most probably wouldn't come in a t-shirt. And sometimes people go to these interviews with t-shirts. Well, or that you must have some knowledge of using computers. And lo and behold, there are students from some universities in some parts of the country, historically, studying these advanced universities, who not have had those opportunities. So it's a reflection of part of the past of this country that we may not have armed people sufficient to be involved in a global business environment, nor even in the South African business environment. And therefore, these are things that working with other partners, we're looking at, they just said, raise this matter to us. And said, these are small things that we may take for granted, but we need to work on. Then there are issues, and on the issue of the Indaba, Mr. Honorable Mokwena, my understanding was that the portfolio committee and the select committee were invited to Indaba. It's a standing invitation.
On that one, I think you are correct.
And then there was also an issue, Chairperson, that unfortunately the Indaba is on today as we talk. So again, maybe the timing of the event also have meant that it would have been impossible for people to have left Indaba to be here. The working relationship between DEET and local government, based on the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act, there are a number of structures through which we try and work with the other spheres of government, both provinces and local governments. We have a mid-tech process, which are structured processes where local government and provinces and ourselves, including SALGA, work together, where we have taken the AGISA program and indicated to the other spheres of government the areas in which we, as a department, will be looking at safety and security, skills, marketing, SME development, transformation, aviation issues, and so on and so forth. And there is supposed to be an alignment between the three spheres of government. It's not an easy process, Chair. I'm sure you are aware 2 months ago the Deputy President launched the AGISA report. And one of the issues raised in there was alignment in government, which is a continuing matter that we look at. But there's a challenge that local government, in terms of tourism, may not necessarily have it on the same level as health, education, providing, you know, the whole issue around, you know, housing and so on and so forth. So we are there against what might be seen as higher socioeconomic priorities. Many local governments would say, yes, we have tourism in the LED. When you ask, you might have one person who is covering many other things in local government, supposedly covering local government. The other areas, you know, whether it is littering in cities or in rural areas, roads, the state of roads, signage, and a number of other areas, where we have come together with local government and said, take care of these issues. Even if you don't say you would be necessarily involved or directly investing in tourism enterprise, there are ancillary issues that if you took care of, raise the bar in terms of a particular local government area, that would help. So, I together with our colleagues in the department through waste management strategies and stuff, we're looking at these matters. Chairperson, there are 285 local authorities, there are districts, about 46 district municipalities, 9 provinces. So, the issue of coordination is a pretty big challenge. But we are not for want of that saying that it's not a matter that we don't work hard on. We also say that the provinces need to be our intermediate dealing with local government. From our social responsibility project, again, we are very much involved with local government in ensuring that we are developing enterprises located in local government, the training that happens in those enterprises, and some of the criteria to ensure that women and youth are empowered. But we agree there is a lot more that needs to be done. We have met with the Department of Local Government, Provincial Local Government, and we're trying to streamline some of our work going forward, working with them. What does the department itself put forward? And what is the department itself doing with regard to transformation and SME development? Then we indicated, number one, our flagship program is the Tourism Enterprise Program, where over the next 3 years we put $185 million on the table. Last year we allocated $42 million. The intention this year will be about $70 million and about $80 million next year. Where together with provinces we try and look at assisting SMEs, do a number of things. Exhibition training, as you said, looking at linkages with the business, big business, small business, trying to get big small business to become suppliers to big business. We've developed a toolkit together with the Tourism Enterprise Program. We also ensure that we try and find ways and means in which SMEs themselves can form associations and that we work with them together. We've done a bit of work in this regard in a number of areas like Soweto. We work with provincial government, particularly here in the Western Cape, because the provincial government has a number of SME activities that it undertakes. Then we have the second economy strategy chapter that we're looking at in particular. We've noted that indeed by omission, we may be strengthening the stronger part of tourism already. I think Honorable Mukwena made the point about holding our conferences in places like the ICC and others. And unfortunately for us, it does so happen sometimes that the scale of the kind of conference that we were holding at the ICC, where Mission Kumari, I'm not sure what the number of people we expected there was, over 500 people, sometimes we may not have the relevant venues in counties. What we are trying to encourage is to say, where there are smaller meetings, we should indeed, you know, with other government departments, begin to look at holding this outside the bigger area. Some government departments then come back and say, oh, but we don't have the information. Where are these places? How do we get there? So we are now beginning to provide information to government departments on smaller venues, on smaller operators. We have said to other government departments that they can begin to track their spend, separately as you ask, in the tourism sector specifically, by ensuring that through the travel agents, one, that they are using graded accommodation, but which is a cabinet decision in 2005, but two, that we begin to track who are those businesses, also not that they are only graded, but who are they. So I think it's really improving our information management system, but also being able to provide people with information so that they begin to know where they can get this information. We've had numerous meetings with procurement officers in departments. Our DG has written to not only government departments, but public entities on this matter. But more work needs to be done. We've set up meetings with them, and our intention this year is that we have a 30% target from the BE Secretariat to push departments in trying to ensure that we use that procurement muscle to bring about change. Chairperson, there was the issue of instruments of transmission, and I'm going to leave a number of those issues for my colleagues, and I think there was a database issue that you would have mentioned that we need to, that you would also speak about, the incentives, the recognition framework. The short length, and I think we would not in any way not say that there's been a difficulty with this program in the way that it was conceptualized originally when it was launched here in Langa in 2004 June. Unfortunately for us, part of the challenge in this area was the ability to create programs and to give the incentives that big businesses were able to do immediately coming to the party. I think what we may have to look at, Chairperson, is how we use models like that used by a business here in Cape Town called Dreamcatcher, where you then lay certain conditions to say to big business, you can put the packages together like Thompson's and others do, but we insist that in doing that, you are going to have certain products which are SME products or black business being part of that. We didn't do that in the first section of the short list, we insisted on doing that in the second shortlist campaign under Mukwena, where now we're beginning to combine the usage of products. Some of the products that appeared in those brochures were transformed businesses. Unfortunately, they were the larger transformed businesses, where there were elements of black ownership. The challenge is, how do you get businesses at the lower end involved in things like the 2010 World Cup and shortlist? In the 2010 World Cup, for example, we have then brought the non-hotel accommodation to the party. What we are having as a challenge is getting the non-hotel accommodation to begin to sign the contract with MATCH, which is the partner of FIFA. MATCH was at Indaba with us. They explained what those contracts are. When the contracts were written originally, they were only going to get 70% of what people would pay when they came in 2010. Now, the contracts have been changed. You'll get the whole amount of money that your room, you'll be charging for your room at 2007 prices with inflation built into that way all the way up to 2010. I think there's a lot more work that must be done in how we develop these packages. Ensure that on the ground, if you are going to use, for example, transportation, it can't be Springbok Atlas alone. You've got to look for a black operator. I think that is where maybe as government, in terms of the short left campaign, we would need to take this matter going forward. Taxi operators, I think here, Chairperson, this is a matter that we'll have to discuss because there are a number of legal issues that we'll have to look at here. There are permits. If you need to operate tours, you need a permit. And if you are a taxi operator, we allow you to run the taxi. But you must still be licensed to then do tours. So I think those are issues that we'll need to look at going forward. We are discussing it in our department and the Department of Transport, looking at this particular matter.
Yeah,
my response is going to focus specifically on what is being done by the council to address the challenges. What we have done as the council, we have looked at the 7 indicators of the charter, and we said that if our role is to monitor implication of implementation of the charter and to bring about change of the sector, we need to address the challenges. And we have put in place certain interventions to address those challenges. The first one that I will refer to is the issue of funding. What is happening on funding is that people have only looked at funding from the demand point of view, not only from the supply point of view. We have initiated a groundbreaking survey whereby we say we want to talk to black people operating in the sector. We want to talk to banks and development finance institutions to see what are challenges that each party is facing. So that wherever we come out with solutions, the solution not is only coming from one side, but it's coming from all other parties. And I must say that the feedback from the financial institutions has been very constructive. What we will be announcing, I think it's going to be around May, June, as the solution that's not only going to be coming from government, but a solution that is going to be driven from people who are providers of the finances, because what has happened in the past, people when they address funding issues have just been complaining but not coming out with a solution. But as the council, we will work with financial institutions to come up with the solutions that are going to be relevant to the sector, and no one has ever done that before. With respect to local government, we also understand that the consumption of tourism takes place on the ground. Businesses are at the ground, and the council is a national institute. And we have institutionalized relationships with provincial and metro focal points. But at that meeting, we found that it should go beyond focusing on the metropolitan area. We should also be looking at local government structures on how they recapacitate tourism officials on the ground to be able to conscientize businesses in their local municipalities around the benefits of transformation, but also encourage black people to take advantages of opportunities that have been brought by the charter. other instruments that we put in place, we strongly believe that without government taking off, organs of state, taking a lead in driving transformation, we're not going to go anywhere. We have developed a tool. It's called public sector procurement tool. We're saying when the council has to report at the end of the year in terms of how the sector has progressed with respect to transformation, it shouldn't only be about how private sector is doing, but it should also be about how different organs of state are really walking the talk. We shouldn't only be focusing on private sector if we, who are the developers of these laws, are really not walking the talk. So we have a public sector procurement tool to measure how public sector or organs of state are really delivering on supporting empowered businesses. Because if they walk the talk, we won't be able to use the lever that we have, which is our power to buy, to drive change. In terms of mentorship, one of the indicators of the charter is enterprise development. It's specifically looking at giving points, because when we engage with businesses, sometimes the issue of what is in it for me comes all the time. We're saying if you are an established business and you invest in supporting a black business, you are going to score in terms of the charter. So we are even putting together examples to the sector. We have developed case studies because people are saying we want to help businesses to grow, but we don't know how. And in terms of our intervention, we have done a survey whereby we've put together case studies on how businesses can implement enterprise development, which includes mentorship. We have looked at interventions both locally and internationally, and we have made those examples in place. And what we have done was also to make sure that those interventions are applicable to larger and smaller players. And then I'm always reminded, I was in Surinam and engaging with the stakeholders, and the lady said, I own a small bed and breakfast. How can I implement enterprise development? I said to her, within your community, you have somebody who's making crafts. If you create a corner in your establishment for this person to showcase what they are doing, that's enterprise development, because you are exposing this product to your market, but also it's value-adding for you because you're making it easier for your clients to access mementos when they are visiting this particular area. So we try to simplify transformation and put examples that it is doable. So we have different programs that we put in place, and we have done our baseline study, and the baseline study has indicated that the sector is responding, but when it comes to rating, we give the sector a G. But also when you look in terms of us as government, we talk about this sector having low barriers to entry, having easy access for black people, saying we shouldn't be talking about the sector sitting at G. We should be talking about all those indicators being on excellence. So as the council, we will be aggressive in putting in place measures to really push the industry to understand transformation and recognize those that are hitting to the call and be able to showcase them and say, these are the people in the sector who are buying into transformation, and make their information available to buyers. We also have developed an emblem. It's a badge, it's an empowered badge. What we're going to be doing is that all those businesses that are empowered, they will have to use the badge. But at the same time, we also educate consumers by saying, this country is about change. And if you want to contribute to stability, if you want to contribute to growth, look for this emblem and do businesses that are transforming. And we believe by so doing, there will be more people who will hit the call and really push the agenda. So for us, it's not going to be the council only, but it's going to be all role players, all organs of state, all beneficiaries, black people heeding to the call, but also private sector understanding the business imperative of transformation. Because transformation is about innovation, it's about growing the cake. We're sitting at 8 million tourists and we are 47 million people. In other countries, they have more than what we have in India, lesser than us, but if we broaden our participation, introduce new products, bring innovation, bring new ways of thinking, bring black people who understand how black people operate, we will bring about change. So we're pushing the business case of transformation, but all of us need to take the responsibility and support the country and everyone else to ensure the transformation happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first question was asking me what did I do to raise the expenses from 14.
What did you do differently?
Okay, differently, yeah. The thing is, at the beginning, when we started, it's a four-star guesthouse, and the standard is quite high, and our prices as well was quite high. And I proposed that we must bring down the price to the other guesthouses that were not even four-star, just to get those people to us. And we've been going to all the corporates, and we created a corporate trade. We've been to all the corporates in the area, and at the moment, we are like the first one that those corporates contact, and we're sending our overflow to other guest houses. And that's just done. We had as well extend our exposure, and I've been attending quite all of the meetings, aside even I'm sitting here at the moment. I've been attending all the meetings of Cape Town Tourism and all organizations, and okay, for the second question, I'm really shocked to hear a question like that today, without be talking about the black economic empowerment, asking me why am I moving, because the owner took me from nowhere, and it's Honorable Mukwena. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm misunderstanding the question. So it's on a good way, actually. It's actually one of the results of the black economic empowerment. I'm trying to empower myself as a black person to start my own business. It's true that I came from nowhere. I've never been in this business before, but they trusted me, and they gave me the business to run. And I think that I've done a very good job, and I can do it on my own as well. I'm sure that there won't be... they will be just proud of me. They won't be disappointed to see that I will be doing my own business as well. Okay. And for the third question, it was asking if I'm just an employer or partner. And a week ago, they approached me and proposed me about the partnership. But we haven't agreed yet about the percentage. And I want to use this house, this room now to... try and talk about that.
Business.
Yeah, exactly. So that should be done later. And I think that's all this. Thank you very much.
If you could be back at 12:10.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and the whole house. I don't know, because I wasn't here when you opened the meeting, so I don't know what the process is, but I'll say greetings to all of you. My name is Buhi Lemtungwa. I come from KwaZulu-Natal, and I work for the organization called Mazisi Services, the Transfrontier Project. I've been working with this organization since 2003 part-time, but full-time this year. And I work in rural development, in rural community development, and that's my main job. What we've discovered this year, well, not this year only, but starting from 2003 as MCCP, is that the whole area of Kwatsani, which is an area that is between that is next to the Sutu. So MCCP is a transfrontier project on its own. And what we've discovered is that tourism in that area is one business that is viable and that could work, and there's no other option for people who work there, who live there, I mean. And having said that, there are many challenges related to tourism in that area. If I can say, what we are working on at the moment as MCCP is the marketing strategy of the Transfrontier Park and trying to diversify the products that come from the area, because it has been clear that most of the product is the same thing, and it doesn't cater for all kinds of tourists. And there are many possibilities and opportunities for cultural ecotourism to happen in the area, but it has not been explored. It has not been explored at the moment. And at the moment, if I can give you a picture of the area in Gwasani, in this municipality, is that the people who really benefit in this tourism industry at the moment is very few people. There are about 3,629 beds in the whole area, and only 15 beds are owned by black women in the area. That's the first point. And the other point is that there was another family that used to own 2 beds in the area, and those 2 beds were burnt down by fire sometime in 2004 and has not been restored. And this is a big problem, because tourism in the area is one of the livelihood options, especially in communities where you find that people don't have land to plant and to have food from their land. So they are looking at diversifying their livelihood means. And tourism has been identified as one area that could help people. But at the moment, it is really not happening. There are many things that I can count that are possible, like the places next to the World Heritage Site itself, so its beauty, the scenery is very good. And there are sunsteka, canoeing things, there are many things related to tourism. But still, another challenge as well is the roads and infrastructure, and infrastructure like roads and water, that is still the problem in the area. And I'm going to give a case study of a small area called Rachenau in this municipality within the Transfrontier area. The area called Rachenau, this area was developed in 1886 by the Turkish German monk together with the chief of the area. And it has got the history that shows the vision of the two people, the chief himself and also the Turkish monk, who tried to make to build a self-sustainable community that did everything in the place. It had a bakery, butchery, school, planting, farming, and all those kind of things. Excuse me. And at the moment, those buildings, excuse me, that heritage is not in use. And the whole heritage is seemingly is going to deteriorate, because no one is taking care of it, and the people themselves are struggling to take care of that heritage and use it to benefit in terms of tourism. And there are 4 groups that operate in the place: the catering, the Rachenau catering group, the tourist guides, also the equipment craft, and others. So this group, what this is doing, this group, they've been struggling since 2001 to make this business a success. One thing that we find, that we've learned from this experience, is something that's rather negative at this time, but we see lots of opportunities at the same time. We see that people are struggling, but we believe that they can do something. One thing that we've observed with these 4 groups in the area is that they don't have an experience of tourism, of what tourism is. Like, they haven't been in other areas themselves to be tourists and really see how to run a tourism business. So that on its own is a problem, because when visitors come, it's difficult for them to understand how should they treat them. Despite we know that we've got the good culture or the good philosophy of Ubuntu, but then when it comes to offering it to tourists, it becomes a problem in some way. And that on its own needs to be developed. And another problem that we find is that they don't have interest in tourists that come in the place, like understanding where people come from and to exchange ideas. Excuse me, to exchange ideas and to, like, talking in simpler terms of where you come from, how is it like, you know, that thing on its own, it makes people to link and to work together. But then when we observe what the way they run the business, they become quiet and just give what they can give, but then, you know, not showing that energy. And we see that as a problem. And another problem is that people in the area are still very much at a subsistence level. For them to think about other things that could really give them a means to make more income, it's sometimes they struggle because they want to find something that can give them money right now. Because sometimes, you know, we know that in tourism, it can take, you know, some time. You need to put some investment so that it could come to something. And then we find that they struggle because there's no money and maybe tourists aren't coming at some stage. So that becomes a problem. And also, people have not been able to understand that they can offer the simplest things in their culture and in the way they live to tourists. Like, there was one incident when there were Norwegian people who came into the area, and they were musicians somewhere in their country, and then people in the area organized some music. The man who was there, you know, he cried because of the music that was, you know, being given by the community people. But then, still, people didn't realize that that's what they can offer to visitors. That's the beauty, that's the talent that they have. So, for us, in these 4 years, 4 or 5 years of working with them, it has been a struggle because we see these things, and sometimes it's difficult for them to see these things. Finally, they've seen some of them have been coming, you know, along to understand that they can own business, but still struggling with these things. They still need to improve on those things that I've mentioned. And another example is of the craft group. There's plenty of grass that they can use in the area, but we find that people from other areas, they will come and take their grass and go and make craft, and themselves they wait for a certain time to cut grass, and by the time they want to cut the grass, other people from other villages have come to take the grass in our area, and that's a big problem because other people use the same resources that we have, and they don't benefit from those resources. And also, in the same project of craft, you find that people will be, there's one person in a group, out of 15 women, there's one person in a group who can really make good craft. The rest of the younger people, they see it as a go-go thing, you know, old people thing. And that's a big problem because craft work is in demand in the area. So that thing of not seeing opportunities, and they make a lot of beadwork, and we find that beadwork in many cases, sometimes visitors don't really, you know, take beadwork, you know, as seriously as the classwork this time. So that thing of trying to balance and see what the visitors need. And lastly, in the problems that we've seen is there's a group that is trying to set up a bedding business. They are young, they've been recently trained, and they've registered in Sobongo to try to find, to get some funds so that they can be helped, you know, set up their business. And there are also traders in the area who've got lots of experience, but these traders, they can't take them because they don't have experience. And these people, they are very competent in their business, and they say they want someone who's competent, who can be a partner. So when we talk about BEE and things like that, they say, well, BEE is possible, but you need someone who can really help the business, not someone who will drag down the business. So there's that attitude, and sometimes it's on both sides, because some people will be encouraging these young people, saying, what are you doing? You know, are you bad guys? You know, how can you just take this as a, you know, bedding as a serious career and all those kind of things? And on the other side, you find that the people who have got skills, they are not willing to take these young people into their business. Well, there are many issues related to that, but that's the case. So, they have said all these things that seem to be not nice. We still see some potential in the area because we know that excuse me, tourism is one business that will go in the area no matter what. So we are proposing that if there could be a hands-on training with the people who like who want to get into tourism business, they don't need people who come in the area and go. They need people maybe in the area who've got expertise, a team of people who can come together and offer this training maybe for a period of 5 years as a process that we can say in 5 years' time we will be seeing people, local people, benefiting from tourism and being able to see opportunities in the area related to tourism and not to take it as a white man thing, which is still the case in many areas, in my area, in Botswana, in Sudan. So we are proposing that as a way forward. And also, we believe that developing cultural tourism is one area that needs to be taken as seriously in the area, because people at the moment, they still come, but they don't really see how people live, and that's what they want. And the least experience that I've had in tourism myself, and of being a tourist myself, it's very good to go to the area and see how people live, and be with the people, and learn, you know, things from people. And for me, I believe the cultural ecotourism in the place really needs serious attention. And on that note, I would say thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will take two presentations. Thank you very much. Could we have Maria Maile?
It's an honor for me today to be sitting here talking about something that is dear to my heart. Glad to see the faces that I know. I hope they still remember me. Because I'm Maria from Kaili, Maria Maine from Majora State University, which is situated in Kaili. I started my bed and breakfast in November 1998, with a background of being in the hospitality industry. I work in hotels and then work at the University of Cape Town for 10 years as a chef and then also as a supervisor in the residence. And then thereafter, when I was seeing that things were not going well with me, I thought to myself that, can you go into something in the township for me and then also go and create jobs for other people. When I did this, I thought that it was my dream. I was thinking that by now I would be owning a business. But nevertheless, I'm still hanging there. Also, the things that I'm concerned about, they were mentioned earlier by Mr. McClough and Ms. Kuchoy. Tourism, really, I always tell people that it's a sector that we always stress. Because I'm not talking about something that I'm hearing, it's something that we are experiencing, something that we are exercising. So Dr. McGillian mentioned that we talk about experience. Yes, we are experienced because we've been working in these places, we've been domestic workers, we know how to clean houses and all this. Now we're doing our own business, because the tourism is a very sensitive sector. The experience that you are talking about, we are getting skills, as the other guy was saying here, that each and every workshop that is taking place, I do my utmost best to attend it. And then, of course, I was also saying thank you to the city because I've been exposed, I've been to Indaba several times, I've seen, I've learned. Somebody asked me last week, I'm just going to Indaba. I said to me, it's not a point for me to go to Indaba. I'll be still selling my two-bedroom house. When I want to go Indaba next time, I want to sell a mansion, a big place. I want to be, not to be an SME. I want to go and sell a big place, maybe a big lodge or whatever. Like outside, with no fear that most of the places that are operating in Khayelitsha, people told me, Maria, how can I go about opening up the business? And then I'll tell them. My concern is, last week there was a cause of tourism that were educating young people. I offer myself to go and give a talk to those students, and then I ask them, what are you intending to do with the course? And then most of them, it was the first time, they don't know about tourism, they don't know. And then all of them say,
Last week there was a course which was offered by a company from Joburg College. They were offering courses on tourism.
So, youth in the township, your forest. All right, for the youth in the township. And then my concern, because I was doing the catering, apparently, for that group. And then, during lunch time, I asked the lady, is it possible that she can let me ask some questions to the students? And then, really, she was nice, she did it. I did it, I asked the students, what are you going to do after the course? And then most of them, they said, we don't know, it's even the first time that we come across, because one of the neighbors told me that there's a tourism course, because everybody's just singing, and 20 cents around the corner, everybody's going to be benefiting. And then I said to them, okay, I addressed them that, okay, what is this tourism about, with my initial knowledge that I know? Because people will talk about tour guiding, B&B, there were a lot of B&Bs in Khayelitsha, but most of them, they had to close down because it's not sustainable. They don't do business. We, let me put it that way, also myself, there's no business that is coming in every day. Sometimes there's a whole month or 2 months that you say without foreign, business, but you say that you're running a business. And then I told them that it is frustrating. Don't just say to yourself that you are going to open up a B&B and then tell me that you'll have money every day. And then tomorrow you'll blame other people. Do your research very well. So last week I went to them again. I said to them, we in the township, we are going to start, me and the ladies, because there's about five of us, the B&B's owners, that we took those students, and then we tell them that we're going to ask, but like now, come and volunteer in our places, so that you must also have a knowledge that last 2 weeks back we went to the mayor's office. We want to go ahead. We were told that there's partnership that is going to happen between the hotels and Sorry guys, you know the frustration that is going on in the township, because I will say that those people will come to us and tell us that your economic program is all wrong. And then you will sit, you wait that, hey, Kuchi Kuchi program, which are hotels, this is our partner, Rishana, Lena, BNG. And then you sit with the hope. Sorry.
We said that there will be a partnership between hotels and BNG. So we wanted to make use of that opportunity to empower them.
And we said to them that, okay, we will be preparing ourselves. We set up this gathering. Last week we had a meeting with the children. We said, volunteer with no money, we will give whatever we can. Although we are also not making money. But we will take it up. That is why we said today this is a good opportunity for us. Because as well as we are not getting nothing, but as I said in the beginning, this is something that is next to my heart. And then I know it is going to change our community. We said to this children, I'm able, because I've been doing this thing practically. I will show you how to do ABC and then take you around to the other people who are doing different things. Because we are fortunate, because the ladies who are owning guest houses, the white ladies on this side, we've also made the relationships with them. Like now, December, there's a cash in my place that received 20,000 rand from the lady who brought her guest to my place for supper, because she's got the BNG here in Kempai. She brings the people for supper at my place. And then I said to her, thank God, because three people were able to have good Christmas because of that. So I said to this young person, we will try on our own to also try to set up programs so that when this time comes, because everybody is just saying that 2010, and we don't want to be frustrated. Lilonke, ngithi, dadalani bomama, hulumente, sengingakwazi ukuthetha mna, mawufuna into ngoku so understand. Because he has been
my appeal is to the government, all the members that are here today, to please help us, because we have been exploited. There were companies who came to take photos for us and yet were getting nothing in return. We are exploited.
E-mentorship is very important. Last year I was given a mentor who is in airport in Nantale Kailicha.
Last year there was a mentorship program that I was involved in. The person was staying at the airport, so I had to move from Kailicha to the airport without having any means for it.
And then that's when we say, ah, then there was over a minute that in the end, the Langham. So I know, we are not at home, because I was born in South America. Now, why should Bachelor and the airport is there?
I found that was not meant for me. It was not benefiting to me, because it's supposed to be him who are supposed to come to me, not me going to the airport, because at least I know at the airport. There is an established lookout hill that we thought that it was going to be of help to us, but this is painful because this is not helping us as far as we can see.
Let me wait for you anyway. It's all the office anyway. Now I don't know, you can't have izolo ave lengise red door ngithetha nomnye sizi ndimonisise igrotha wathi no I don't even know andiyazi noba zikhona i-event and breakfast up ndibuza ke ngoku
there is a tourism office at Miway. That office is not helping us. In so much that yesterday I met a lady who was carrying brochures. Oh, I gave her brochures that I brought along with me. People who are deployed in the locations are not helping us. I'm saying that without having any fear. They are not helping us in whatever, because even if we meet them and then we present ourselves, they say no, they are not aware that there is a structure that we belong in. Years back, I was stated as an example, but I don't want to make mention of names of people whom they were referring to me, and yet I have. They said there is Maria Ekailisa who is having a B&G. She is not crying for help from the government, but at least she makes sure that she makes ends meet, at least her business is doing progress.
Our
humble appeal is to get some assistance, even if we can get 3 people a week so that our people can get jobs. You know, if people are working, at least the crime rate will be low.
I
am expressing my feelings painfully because we are not getting anywhere. So not that last year there was a woman in housing who built her house. She made a loan from the bank, hoping that there will be people who would be coming to her business. But to her surprise, there were no people who were coming to her business to support. I would like to express a word of thanks to the government for bringing us here to express our views and feelings about this industry. It's a pity that the tour guides that we used to work with are not here, but we hope that we're going to get some assistance.
The other thing that I also want to say, the first speaker here, this other gentleman who was talking here, who's got a guest house in Constantia, I just want to rectify what he was saying when the guy who got the restaurant in Kailisha. When he asked, when can he come? Guys, there's no fear of nothing. The only thing that guy, maybe he misunderstands, he cannot cook food for people every day and then there's no people who's coming. What he was mentioning, he was saying that the booking. You must just book, you know, phone before time, and then so that you must prepare. Because it is what we were experiencing. Because when I started, also, I also used to wake up in the morning and then do my cooking, thinking that there's lots of people are going to come, and then it's not a crime, because our people know for the fact that tourism is something that is bringing food on the table. So we in the community, we also try our utmost best to teach our people that the tourist is here to bring food. Not when you see the tourist that you see money. There's also a short story that I also have. 2 years later, the group of Afrikaner people, old ladies who came to my place for food tasting. It was a group of about 40 people. I cook all the Moroccan everything, all our food, and then they came for food tasting. One lady cried. She said to me, I'm 80 years of age, but this is my first time for me to come to a township. And I don't know that I missed, because after their food tasting, I took them to the shipping, I took them to the crèche, I took them to the women who are vegetable gardens. And then everybody, although it was Saturday morning, because people were little, but you know, everybody wanted to interact. It was such a nice atmosphere. And then that lady cried, and then I asked her, are you sick or what? She said, no, I'm crying because what I'm seeing is not us, what I thought it was going to happen, because the bag was clinging to her, and it's such a, when I talk about this thing, I'm sorry, to me, I'm talking to that about something that is, because we and the tourists, we teach like this, we talk to them, we know, you can see my business book is there, it's full, people from all over the world come to our places. So, like, 2 weeks back, I mean, April on the 20th, I had people, 20 people who come for my place, so to my place for lunch. Then one lady said to me, you know, I'm so anxious to eat your stew, because at work, my colleague told me about my stew. I asked her to work where in Sweden. You know, it made me feel so good. In Sweden, people know about my stew and my chakalaka. So, thank you very much.
Maybe this stage I'll allow for invite some questions. Sure.
Thank you, Chair. I have a question for Sister Fungini, but before I do that, Chair, with your permission. There was some advice that I wanted to give in the first session, which I never got a chance to, and I think it's a very useful one. I had a discussion with yes, but I just want for the record. Okay, we have in our country lots of people that come here as economic and political refugees. And I'm sure when the Department of Tourism engages with the Home Affairs and Immigration, what they must do is see if they have done in order to see what are the skills those people are bringing with them. Now, you know, Chair, communication skills are very critical in this industry. In Africa, we speak Portuguese, we speak French. How would it be to engage those people who have those language skills, and some of them might even have had training in the industry, but they're here, they're refugees. Why can't we use their skills? Now, I know one might argue that they're going to deprive a South African of the job, and I don't think so. If we can, somebody's French skills and some experience in the hospitality sector, if you employ him, firstly, you will be giving him dignity. Secondly, he will be not such, he wouldn't be the burden on our social welfare system. We're using it, the rewrite on our hospitals, clinics, and everything. They can then attract, I mean, French tourists in the company of a black person speaking beautiful French. Can you imagine how comfortable the person feels? If you increase your arrivals as a consequence of proper communication, then you would create more jobs. And then our local people will benefit from it. So I just want to say, they must look at those people, because when they fill in the form for refugee status, they must say, what is their occupation, what have you been doing before? And if they find that there were some people who have these skills, then why can't the department look at them seriously? Just give them a month or two or three training, you know, a few workshops, and engage the person. That's the net, you know, an advice. The issue of the rural setting and tourism in that area, that Pangiri was talking about. What about the role of traditional leaders? Does the department look at the traditional leaders and try to get some kind of a workshop going where they can be actually made aware about the potential of the tourism sector and the benefits for the people in the respective areas? What about the schools in areas which are closer to sites of tourist interest? Can't you run workshops in those schools for the youth? For example, can't the department invest in that and use those students as tourist guides? For one thing, they would be speaking English because they're doing English at school. Secondly, it would prepare them for bigger business as a consequence of the experience they would have earned at that level. And in fact, after school, they would then want to go into a tertiary institution. If the government finances the education, then here we go. You've got a beautiful leader in the tourism industry. Campaigns in areas where there are tourist potential. And to Sister Maria, she speaks about lack of assistance in terms of funding, etc. And she says that, she is sometimes very vague, but I can understand it. She says something like this, you'll find that most of the time we are told criteria, and yet we are in the township. I would like to explain what does she mean by that, I mean, what criteria, and who is telling her these criteria. I suppose it is to do with funding that you've got to fulfill X, Y, and Z requirements. If there is scope for her expanding her business, I can't understand why that funding could not be made available. And she spoke about lack of assistance from someone, I don't know who it is, she must say, no, don't give us name. Which department is this, or which office is this that she speaks about that she went to and she did not get any joy from somebody who is supposed to be assisting them? Who is this, what department is she talking about that's not helpful? Because the director is here, the DDG, I suppose. You are the deputy director, right? Yeah. So maybe as a case study, you can take this area on as a case study, okay? See, which is this office that she's talking about? Who is these persons? How much of truth is there in what she's saying? I tell you what, this lady is passionate. I can tell you, and she knows what she's talking. I'm not going to underestimate anything that she says. She has what it takes to succeed. I can see that. But she just does not seem to be getting the support required. So we must put our money where our mouth is. Why isn't she getting the funding? Make some inquiries on that. It will be helpful. Thank you.
I hope that you won't emulate this mobile operation.
Sorry.
Any other questions? If you call them, this is... No, look, we can make it in the full line of the if there's no nothing at school and nothing wrong with women and anything, I can't. Maybe it will be.
Okay, you have a question. What I can say, I've said two things, which one is about hands-on training to sustain businesses. And maybe here I'm talking about rural setting, you know, and it maybe differs from a township setting and all those kind of things. But my experience, especially the experience working with this ecotourism group, I feel that, first of all, myself, I'm not a business person, yeah? I work with them to encourage them to get into the business. And some people come and work with them. And the people that have worked with them, I can see that they've been struggling. And some have said, enough is enough, you know, we can't give more than this. And for me, that means people need, a real, I'm not an institution per se, but people who really get on, you know, with the training and develop it to be a 5-year plan, as I said, or something like that. And I think by then we can achieve something. So that's the need, something that I can say we really need.
And for sure, that goes with knowledge, yeah? It doesn't just go, you know, say you bring a team of people. It needs a lot of money. So funding is one area that is needed. Because also, let's say, for cultural ecotourism, people, there are some people like this women, they say they want to have their home upgraded so that they meet the standards of tourism. Like at the moment, the toilets are not good, so they can't really bring visitors. And also sometimes you find that the houses themselves, you know, they are not in a good shape, they are not even the standard of the municipality, let alone the standard of tourism, yeah. So that's something that is needed. And I don't think everyone wants to build a new B&B, but I think people can use their houses, their homes, as a basis to create tourism. And but, as I said, it needs some money. And for me, that's the biggest need. And also, there are young people. I hear Ubuti besides talking about young people or people, you know, assisting and all those kind of things, young people get trained. I think that you know, people can be trained, like Ubuti has said as well, that people can be trained, but if they don't have a vision of tourism, not because that they can't do it, yeah, because we know where tourism comes from in our area. It's a white man's thing, yeah, but they need to benefit from it. So if young people come into the picture, they need to come into the picture with a lot of training, and not training that will come and go, just come thinking of giving tourism training, and then that's all, 1 week training or 2 week training. That's not enough. Young people need to be helped to get into this business. And there are these things of leadership today. How about making them real into communities, not people, young people who get leadership, and they don't have an idea of how they can work in the community. The leadership is sort of superficial in some way. How can this leadership be helpful in a reality of the learner? I think that could help.
Into negative, into the guy of negative police.
The government has managed to advertise ourselves through the number that we attended, but what we need now is growth in this
for negative, for money funding, so even the little the cool expansion.
We need funding so that we can expand our houses that we are using. Sometimes at our places, small as they are, we do get bookings of our 20 people to come, whereas I'm having only a 2-bedroom house.
Because
the 20 people that come to our places, usually we share them amongst our vendors. We do have other vendors that are around in our area, but at least people can get the assistance that they need and exposure in our B&B.
Because
another problem is being mentored by a person who doesn't even care about what you are doing.
I saw this thing down on the day. What one about you today experience already? He said, not a single mom, I've got a lot of business. siyakwazi nathi njengabe already nje siyenzayo ngoba kaloku siyenza ngenxa yokuthanda le nto siyenzayo ngoba sifuna le nto ikhule sibonisa aba bantu bacimba le nto asiyazi basiyayazi.
As we are women who are actively involved in this business, we would like to show other people that at least we as women can do something. We want to expose our businesses as much as we can. The government can make use of us, especially concerning the youth.
Ngoba ina sika ile industry siyayitheka ngokuphelele njengmanje sithi naba mama balimayo abanye abantu bebengenzi nto sithi sijikela phakuwa ezithole sihlala nabo iimfuno zabo siyazazi siyavangale ethethayo uthathe le ndawo ayithethayo uyoqalela uba umabani mabani inoba mawuhlali ungenzi nto qala le gazi yakho kwenzela uba xanje uxelela abalelo uba nanko umntu ayazi ukuthi akakuniki mali wena ukwenzele balento kozotisa nawo abanye abantu.
The help that we need will also share it to amongst other people like women who are doing their vegetable gardens. When we have got tourists who come to our places, we invite them to have a look at those gardens so that they can know what are we doing out there. Coming to the question that has been asked by this gentleman.
The company that it was 2004. My mentor was given. It was a tour operator who's operating from. I'm not ashamed to give the name. It was Envy. Enver, my name. Yeah. Yeah. From Grassroots Church. Yeah, he was my mentor. It's only Maria, when are you coming to me? And then I asked him away at the airport at my office, and I asked him, Enver, how can I come from Kailisa to your office in Kailisa? I mean, Enver knows my place. He normally brought, and then I only went once, and then I told myself, how can I go? The mentorship must be done at my place. So it's weird. I thought that this is not the kind of mentor that I want.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to know, she speaks about a mentor being given to her. To understand, how was this thing, who organized mentorship? And what is your understanding of a mentor? What are your expectations of a mentor in a business? Do you have some understanding? What do you think, what are your expectations of it?
My expectations from a mentor now, to my understanding, I was expecting to be given a mentor, so maybe somebody from a hotel or somebody who's running a well-established guest house, somebody who's doing the very same thing that I'm doing, you know? And because I've seen other people who only came yesterday into this industry because they are already established and they were given people to be, you know? So, and then it frustrated me because how can I be a tall guy? I mean, a better person to be mentored by a tall guy.
Yeah, who gave you that mentor? That's what I
mean. It was the time when we were there. It was preparation when we were supposed to go in Davos, Western Cape Tourism. In Shaft, the service provider.
Thank you for that answer. Is there any other question at this stage? Jambule na wakona mamaile nawe sisi mtumba. Eki presentation say.
At this stage, I think we should bring for lunch. But before we do that, because of time problems, we have to keep lunch very, very busy. Okay, the ladies here will accompany the our visitors to the old assembly, so we'll be having lunch. And if we could really try and get back at least by 1:45. I know that cutting is quite thin, but we've got to do this. Thank you very much. Let's be back at 1:45.
Sorry, Chair, I've just got to do my member statement, and I'll be late, but carry on, please. Even, you know, I know you'll miss me, but
we will miss you.
Okay. Chair,
I will
have to go and mark
out that present
in the scenery, you know.
Yeah, okay, you can sneak in and come back.
Oh, I don't have to go.
Okay. Okay. No, if you're here, you don't have
to. You don't have to.
Oh, okay, then that's fine.
Give me the thought of the
more experience.
Yeah,
that's fine. Oh,
mark
present, yes.
Okay, we'll come back at 1:45. Thank you.